Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Happy Saturday to you. Happy Father's Day tomorrow. A subject on the minds of many men, especially after the age of 50. What happened to those erections you used to have in your teenage years? Today we're going to do the show on erectile dysfunction, not something men like to share with each other or with doctors or with anybody, in fact, except they're thinking about it a lot after the age of 50. I can guarantee you that from what I hear in my office. So let's get into it. If you can get to the website, if you're new to the show, straighttalk.cc, that's not .com, .cc with two T's. As always, my regular audience, you're already on the website. And we're going to teach by pictures, except if you can't get on the computer, simply listen, use your imagination. I'll try to describe things so you can understand them even without the picture. Herbs, do they work? The quick fix. Viagra. What about Viagra? Lots of men over the age of 50 use Viagra. Try Viagra. If you've noticed, when you look at the container for Viagra or you look at the ads for Viagra, you have 1 to 2 pages of side effects listed. Now, because of the legal system, because of the laws, every pharmaceutical has to have side effects. But here's an inside line. The side effects regarding the usage of Viagra and a few of the other ones are very real. They're vasodilators. Viagra, and I'm going to show you today one of the things that it does or how it functions, it's going to vasodilate. That vasodilation can go on everywhere. So anybody with even the slightest tendency towards cardiovascular issues, but this encompasses, because it's a potent vasodilator, dozens of other scenarios that can run you into a very, very bad place. Viagra has real side effects, and lots of people get into trouble using it. There's something called priapism, where you get an erection, and the erection won't go away. And the sequela to that sometimes is terrible. Now, it's not uncommon. It's not rare. And I heard this from a nurse in Orange County who's been a nurse in ER for over 25 years, that about once every month someone comes in and they have to have part of their penis amputated because of priapism. So using Viagra can be very, very dangerous. And if you use your common sense, well, if any prospective drug that you're going to take has 2 pages of side effects, I mean, it's laughable at this point with some of the drugs that you see advertised on television, et cetera, where for at least 15 or 20 seconds, they're going through the side effects of the drug. Believe me, it's not just the laws making them do that. It's that there are very real side effects. So before you go to something Viagra, like Viagra, Cialis, et cetera, try to go about it naturally. Now, what does that mean? As always, the point to my show is, it doesn't necessarily mean that you were to jump onto the herbal bandwagon, as if the herbs that we produce, that we harvest, that we take, and that we claim are going to substitute for something like Viagra are actually going to work. I think that's overly optimistic. I'm going to talk about the herbal solutions later, about how to approach it herbally. But this idea that, well, I can't take the Viagra, I'm into the natural thing, so I'm just going to jump on the herbal bandwagon and watch the miracle occur, it doesn't work for the most part. And if you know my show, the point's going to be there are fundamentals to the health of the erection, to being able to maintain the erection, to not prematurely ejaculate, to produce enough sperm in the ejaculation, to produce enough testosterone. You're going to see over the next 60 minutes, this is a complex web of variables that hones down to a set of specific concerns for you. So one guy's concerns and his erectile dysfunction are not yours, and vice versa. So you got to get your profile. And so you got to get your education. And as you know, this show is dedicated to your education. So let's begin. Enough said about Viagra. Just take a look at picture number 4. How Viagra works. You know, the pharmaceutical companies, when they want to sell a drug, give fantastic summaries of how their drugs work. So just take a look here. Sexual arousal still required. This is picture number 4 on straighttalk.cc. Just go to the K Bright shows. Sexual arousal still required for Viagra to work. So once around, Viagra works by inhibiting enzyme PDE-5. Now, listen to that. Sexual arousal is still required for Viagra to work. That's a whole phase regarding your ability to get an erection. You have to be aroused. Now, that may seem like common sense, but it's counterintuitive when a guy starts to get depressed about his age, about the fact that some of his dreams didn't come true, about a divorce, about all sorts of things that later on down the line tip the scale. We're going to get into that later, but point one, it's telling you, even in the pharmaceutical ad here, that you've got to get stimulated first for Viagra to work. It's not a cure-all. It increases the level of something called GCMP, blah, 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 down on the bottom there, okay? The level of this, thus the level of CGMP is increased, allowing extra blood flow to the penis. Now, there it is. In a nutshell, Viagra is going to vasodilate you to get more blood down there. Now, there's an interesting thing about the penis. If you don't get enough blood to it, the valves in the venous system, the drainage system, don't lock. So when a guy gets half an erection because he doesn't get enough blood down there for a bunch of reasons, one of which is the nitrous oxide, et cetera, but when he doesn't get enough blood down there, the veins can't lock out the blood that's there. So if you talk to guys that get a very hard erection, you have to understand that once you get all that blood down there, that blood gets trapped because the veins have valves and those valves shut. So you got to get enough blood in there to lock the blood in. A lot of guys would settle for half an erection or three quarters of an erection, but the first thing that happens when they're getting half the erection or three quarters of the erection is they can't sustain it because the venous system, the valves in it, don't lock out. Now, whose valves don't work? That's not really the issue. Once you get the blood there, the valves work. I mean, there are exceptions to this. But by and large, once the valves are there, you're going to lock down and you're going to maintain. So it really is all about the blood flow. Now, if it's about the blood flow, we have to understand something, a couple of concepts here. Let's go on down to picture number 13. Get down to picture number 13. If you can't look at the computer, what you're looking at in picture 13 are all the artery supply, the arterial supply into the penis. And into that penis, well, now you've got to go to picture number 8. Into that penis, all that blood fills up this spongy part of the penis called the corpus cavernosum. There is something called the corpus cavernosum. If you're looking at the pictures, that's picture number 8. And that's a big sponge. And you see that little deep artery? That artery vasodilates into the spongy part of the penis, the corpus cavernosum. And all that blood expands out the size, the width, the length of the penis. Now, that's what you want to happen optimally. The question is, do you vasodilate? And then the question is, do you get the blood supply? Now, the arteries to the penis can plaque. They plaque just like every other artery. So if you go to picture 14, they're showing you a nice rendition of one of the major arteries, the iliac artery, external and internal iliac arteries, coming off the abdominal aorta. These are peripheral arterial supplies. You don't have to rush to emergency with a clot of fatty plaque and blood in these arteries and gangrene setting in to suffer from it. I want you to get this concept. I want you to understand that when those arteries to the penis vasodilate, the amount of blood that's available to them is a function of the complete and total volume that gets down there once the heart pumps. And if you have a little plaque here, like in the coronaries, and then a little bit of plaque in the aorta, and a little bit of plaque in the iliac, and a little bit plaque here, and then a little bit of plaque there, and then down as you get closer to the penis, a little bit of plaque, the total systemic effect of the blockage can be massive. That's not what they tell you. When they talk about circulatory issues, thus the grave need to vasodilate blood flow to the penis, they're talking about picture 13, all those little arteries to the penis, or they're talking about the extreme end of the iliac arteries. But you have to understand that your entire circulatory system and its patency is what delivers the total amount of blood down into the penis. There's no end to the significance of this. This is a major diagnostic problem. We think in terms of the erection as the function of the peripheral blood to the penis. We have to look at the amount of total circulation and how much you're losing because you're plaqued systemically. So a guy that's got, say, 20% of the ascending aorta plaqued is losing a lot of blood to the penis. No, it's not compensated. It adds up. So who's that? Well, how would you know that? Well, that's when you have to get into testing, and unless you have an acute problem, nobody's going to test. And this is the thing about plaque. As we get older, arteries plaque, not just the arteries to the penis, but arteries systemically. So that in any given moment, per contraction of the heart, there's less volume of blood circulating everywhere. That's not a little thing, that's a big thing. And so when we localize down into the arteries to the penis and we sonogram them, we look for big clots and plugs to the penis itself and the near vicinity of it. We don't find anything, or we find a little bit of blockage. We say, can't be this problem. It can't be a vascular problem to the penis, because we're not seeing any large, significant, alarming clot. This is where mistakes are made all the time. So when I talk about fundamentals meaning before you trust fully that the herb is going to produce the miracle, before you do that, you have to think in terms of, okay, I'm 50, I'm 55, I'm 60, maybe I have a new relationship. Maybe, in fact, you and your significant other, your wife, your whoever, over the years are getting to this point now where things aren't working as well and you want to do something about it. Most people go straight to the Viagra. You've got a percentage of people then who will try the herb, and that herb is a Hail Mary prayer, because once these other fundamentals, and I'll get into more, cross a certain threshold, those herbs really don't give you the return. And then you feel like, well, it said that the deer antler would do this, and it said the ginseng would do that, and it said the cordyceps would do this, and it said the maca would do that, and it said the horny goat weed would do this, and it said the cordyceps and this and that. And you start to feel like, no, they didn't deliver, and it must all be a lot of bunko. The herbs have to be working in the terrain that allows you to receive them. You have to be able to receive the herb. You have to do your part for the herb to work. This is always overlooked. So, circulation. What about circulation? Well, you got to deal with plaque. We're not going to do a show on how to deal with plaque today. done that in so many of my other shows. But you got to factor this in. Now, if you're diabetic, if you're running high blood sugar, if your blood is too thick, think about this. Those of you who have listened in the past, blood viscosity. Poor circulation is not just plaque. Poor circulation is the blood's too thick. Poor circulation is the venous blood doesn't move fast enough. Poor circulation has many, many entities and many situations that create poor circulation. Diabetes, a tendency towards diabetes. So you have to think in terms of plaque. You have to think in terms of circulation. You have to think in terms of the ability to vasodilate. And the vasodilatory effect, the ability to expand, is a function of the parasympathetic nervous system, which we're going to get into later. For those arteries to the penis and periphery to expand to allow more blood flow, you have to have good parasympathetic nerve flow. And that's the electrical system coming all the way up from the brain and down and also into the sacrum. So when we talk about the erection and we look at Viagra and blood flow, what we want to think on the bigger scale is, do you have blockage in those arteries systemically? Do you have an ability to truly vasodilate? And that's in part a physical phenomenon and a neurological phenomenon. Let's talk about the neurology of vasodilation. To do that, you've got to come down and take a look at our blessed sacrum. Let's go down to picture number picture 31. Would you take a look at picture 31? So that spinal cord, that spinal column, all the vertebra, when you get to the bottom of that spinal column, you've got that sit bone, your sacrum. And that sacrum, if you look at the picture, is like a pump. It's triangular shaped, and it pumps. And as it pumps back and forth, hopefully you're looking at picture number 31, excuse me. As that sacrum pumps back and forth, which it should be doing, it should not be fixated. It should be flowing like the hinge on a gate. And as it comes forward and drops back, like the dancer, like the way it used to be when you were younger, like the way we try to make it when we stretch the muscles down around the sacrum from the gluteal muscles to the psoas muscle, which we're going to show you in a second. And you start to get a pumping mechanism working in that sacrum. You start then to stimulate the nerves to the penis that control vasodilation. So vasodilation to the arteries is stimulated from nerves that come off the sacrum and that are enhanced by a pumping mechanism that you should be able to facilitate. Well, unless what? Unless times have changed for you and you've gotten stiff and rigid and not in the right place. Take a look at picture number 30. Picture number 30. That picture should do all the talking. There's a side view of a competent psoas muscle and an incompetent one. Lots of people don't know that muscle. If you've been listening to this show regularly, you're well acquainted with it. And what that effectively means is that this muscle, deep to your organs, so it's behind your organs, when it gets tight, it moves forward. When you don't stretch it, when you can't stretch it, when you don't know it exists, it starts to come forward. When it comes forward, it pushes the belly out. As it pushes the belly out, it begins to change your posture. So if you look at that person on the left, that person's evolved, unfortunately, to the person on the right. And this is what we call aging. All of a sudden, the head comes forward, the shoulders hump, the low back goes into some weird arch, the belly comes out, and what does it do? It fixates the sacrum. So you lose your sacral pump. All those nerves to the penis coming off the sacrum don't work as that sacrum fixates. And the fixation of that sacrum is directly linked to the shortening, tightening, and anteriority, the coming anterior of the psoas muscle locking the sacrum down, and you lose parasympathetic flow. So if you go down to picture number 35, if you take a look at picture number 35 on the bottom, that's a picture of the brain, the spinal cord, and those top nerves there come off the vagus nerve. The bottom nerves, if you look at the bottom of that picture, you see all the wires to the urinary bladder, the urethra, some parts of the kidney, and definitely to the penis, the vaginal canal, uterus, the ovaries. The nerves off the sacrum go to the reproductive organs. Those nerves are the parasympathetic nerves. Those nerves control vasodilation. Vasodilation is enhanced blood flow to the penis off the sacral pump. That pump is controlled by the brake. That pump is controlled by the psoas muscle, by competence in that psoas muscle. Those of you that can get to the computer, you're looking at picture 25. That's your psoas. Picture 26. That's your psoas muscle. Picture number 20. Picture number 30. Again, that psoas muscle when it shortens and comes forward. So what happens to a lot of guys by their 50s? They put on the extra 20 or 30 pounds. The psoas comes forward. The sacrum locks. They lose the neurological component to vasodilation. Problem one. The other problem one, of course, is that they're plaquing up. Oh, well, the doctor told me I was just fine. The doctor, wherever, I'm just fine. There's nothing there. You got to understand what you're being told when you get these tests. It's considered normal to be 10 to 15 to 20 to 25% plaqued. It's considered okay that by the time you're 70 years old, one third of your arterial system is gone. It's considered normal because everybody's like that. We call this normal aging, like we call arthritis normal aging, like we call a decline in cognitive function normal aging. You know, the problem in medicine is we have a set of norms allopathically that nobody wants to follow. And the doctors are very well aware that effectively people age and there's nothing you can do about it. And if you're 70 and you're walking, if you're 80 and you're alive, you've done well. But, you know, tomorrow's Father's Day. Father's Day can mean, well, I remember as being a kid and it meant grandpa was honored like your dad, like your uncles. And there was grandpa and he was 60. And he was sitting there and he was missing a percentage of his teeth. And he was sitting there and he had slowed up. And you, as a little kid, would know that your grandfather was an old man. He was an older man who thought like an older man. America destroyed that notion over the last 25 years. We don't have Americans today that think that 60 and 65 is old. We have 60-year-olds looking for new careers. We have 60-year-olds looking for new relationships. We have 60-year-olds who want to have new families. We have a completely different generation of people dealing with what is life like after the age of 60. And one of the things that's come with it is nobody wants to lose their erections anymore. Nobody wants to forget about that part of their life. Not that they ever did. But this is way more in the forefront today. So the norms, when you're in the hospitals and the doctors are giving you tests, those norms are based upon observations of generations over time. But they're not meeting the expectations of what's coming in. You have to understand that. And here's an example. You're going to be told at 20-25% occlusion of ultrasounds, carotid ultrasounds, CT scans, so on and so forth, that you're just fine, that it's normal, that you're okay. because they figure you're going to live to 70, and at the age of 70 years old, well, maybe you'll be half plaqued, and that still get you by. No one's accounting for the fact that after you lose that much blood, good luck with your erection. Important concepts. So, anteriority of the psoas, and if you want to know what to do about that, all my shows that mention the psoas muscle, there's so many, give you different angles on how to deal with that. I constantly harp on this because it's so much of an issue. Parasympathetic supply of nerve along the lines of vasodilation. Now let's get to another concept. There is a nerve. It's called the pudendal nerve. Pudendal. Go to picture 19. P-U-D-E-N-D-A-L. Pudendal. Pudendal neuralgia. Pudendal entrapment syndromes. Go to this picture. Go to picture number 21. Picture number 21. Pudendal nerve is predisposed to entrapment. There is a physical nerve. There is a physical nerve deep to your buttocks and down just below the most extended point on the butt cheek. Just below, technically speaking, the piriformis. It's between the piriformis and the sacral tuberous ligament. And there's a nerve there called the pudendal nerve. It is commonly entrapped. And as it's entrapped, you lose, I didn't say vasodilation now, you lose sensation to the penis. What do we mean by sensation to the penis? When it said Viagra doesn't deal with stimulation, that you have to be stimulated for Viagra to work, what it was saying is there's different levels of receptivity to the penis. One is sensorial, the other is psychological. The brain's got to turn the penis on through the parasympathetic nerves. The sacrum's got to turn the penis on because the sacrum's mobilized. But when the penis is touched, when the penis is stroked, when the penis is stimulated in some sensorial way, there's a nerve that delivers sensation to it. In other words, if you trap the pudendal nerve, you know who this happens to? Very commonly, bike riders, guys that do those long, long rides, those power rides where they're just pumping away with those legs there up the hills on those 40-mile rides, sitting on the seat of the bike crushes that nerve. To what level? To the level where you can't move your legs? To the level where you don't go to the hospital? No, this is not what I'm harping on. Just like I was harping on the 20% occlusion that you'll never get diagnosed, compression in the pudendal nerve deprives sensation to the penis 10%, 20%. Underneath that extra 30 pounds of fat, underneath the vasodilatory issues, underneath the common issue of depression after the age of 50 or 60, you don't notice that the penis is no longer nearly as sensitive as it used to be. So if you look up pudendal nerve entrapment, a wire from the low back that goes to the sacrum, that goes towards the penis, that gives skin sensation to the penis, and that's just what we call subclinically compressed, meaning it's just a little tight. You lose sensation. You barely notice you lose sensation. When you go to the literature to look up pudendal nerve entrapment, when you go to the literature to look up pudendal nerve entrapment, they do pudendal decompressions. They do surgeries. They do all sorts of invasive stuff to address the issue, which you don't have. You don't have that. If you're listening now, you don't have pudendal nerve entrapment. You have subclinical compression. It just means it's not nearly as bad. It just means it knocks you out 10%. just like the plaque knocks you out 10%. Just like the inability to vasodilate because the sacrum's fixated knocks you out 10%. Just like your psyche and the things that happen that people have to come to terms with in middle age knocks you out 10%. Do you see how this works? Do you see how it works? Do you see how we look for these big problems? Well, we checked the guy's pudendal nerve. It wasn't quite cut in half. So we told him, this isn't your problem. He didn't have a circulatory problem because we didn't see a large clot on the artery to the penis or some fatty plaque wrapped in a lot of blood clots. So we know it's clear there, Charlie. And we keep going like he doesn't want to kill himself. You know, he's been through 6 marriages that didn't work, but hey, he told me he was happy. We'll cross the depression thing off the list. You see, this is what they're doing. They're looking for the kind of stuff that's going to send you to ER. That's not really what's knocking at you. It's not what's driving the problem. It's 5% here, 10% there, 5% here, 10% there, 5% there. It's your profile. Your profile. When you have a symptom, when you have a health concern, do not look for it. You have to bring your profile to it. That's where the education comes in. This is what America's missing. Talk radio is, I got the herb, it'll fix the problem. First myth. Talk radio is, let me talk to you about the blood supply to the penis and what you can do about it. Oh, yeah, I tried that thing about the blood supply with a vasodilator. No. Fixing health problems is about bringing together multiple systems to create a profile. And that profile's specific to you. You may be high on the circulation issue and low on the nerve plexus issue. You may be high on the nerve issue and low on the circulation issue. Once you assemble all the variables, how those variables apply to you is really where the problem is. And that teaches you that profile, how you have to address the problem for you. Without that, sorry, Charlie, I don't see good results anywhere. I don't see good results in allopathic medicine, and I don't see good results in alternative medicine. And my point and the point of the show is America's got to get the upgrade on how to approach themselves with natural healing. And we got to put education on the A list, not the C list and not the B list. When I started the show, I wanted to use pictures because I knew it would help. And people are busy and people don't have the time to look at pictures. And I'll tell people, get to the website, straighttalk.cc, and look at the pictures later. And the bottom line is, people try, but, you know, it's understandable in a sense. But I got to tell you, the statistics, the number of illnesses out there, it is unbelievable to me. In the last 5 years, it's unbelievable. And what it's suggesting is what we always said. We always said that as the ecosystems started to pan out, as the Mother Earth was challenged to the point where, well, can you really get around it? Do you really think that the food is better than it was 100 years ago, or the air is cleaner than it was 100 years ago? Or we have more of the ecosystems intact that we did 100 years ago? I don't care what we do. As the earth dwindles, you will see chronic disease continue to climb. And I don't care what we do genetically. I don't care what new miracle drugs we make. The earth has sustained us. And if we don't continue to respect that, if we don't respect that, you're going to see what we're seeing. So the call here is to bring health to the A-list, thus the need to really get the inside track on this stuff. I know that people can do this. They're just not making it a priority yet. And yes, it's understandable, but no. If you looked at what's happening, it would really make you think. So the pudendal nerve that gets entrapped. Picture 17. It's between the piriformis and the obturator obturnis muscle. It's in your butt deep. And that whole complex there, from the psoas to the sacrum to the lumbar spine, and the rigidity that occurs if those tissues are not tended to, meaning the flexibility levels, working out the adhesions within those muscles. If that area becomes rigid, then those tissues are going to suffer. And what we say is that we lose the pumping mechanism. The pelvis no longer pumps. If you go up to the one and only here, picture number, we had a great, if you go up here to picture, where is it? If we come up, I guess they didn't put it in. I guess it's not in here today. If you go up and you consider that the spinal cord has two ends to it. One end is the sacrum, and the other end of the spinal cord is the brain. And if you consider that the brain is talking to the sacrum, and the sacrum's talking to the brain, and both of them are pumping, both of them are reciprocating with each other, then you'll understand the loss of function once one of those two ends begins to fixate. There's no circulation. There's no nerve flow when the lower half fixates. There's no circulation and there's no nerve flow when the upper half fixates. So if you're stiff in the neck and you're stiff down in the sacrum, you lose blood flow. You lose the vasodilatory effect. And then you also lose nerve flow. Now, right there, we've laid down precious fundamentals, most precious fundamentals, to which then you're going to add, it's not a local issue you're concerned about. It's the systemic issue. So the deposition of plaque systemically. Then you're going to talk about structural blocks systemically, meaning your head is just as important to your penis as your penis is to your head. Now that's bizarre, but that's the principle. It's not the local site, it's the systemic site in reciprocity. Now down there, down low, we have the testicles. And we have this belief that the testicles producing testosterone contribute greatly to the strength of the erection. And that's true. So we put all our focus on testosterone production. And there's lots of herbs will support the claim that you can enhance testosterone production. None of them will ever compete with sleep. Go to picture number 41. Look at picture number 41. Picture number 41 shows you quite clearly on that graph the relationship between total sleep and the rise in testosterone. Now that's a very clear graph. And that graph very clearly points to the fact that you're doubling, if not tripling, your testosterone when you get the full 8 hours. This notion about 5 hours, I mean, if you look at that graph between the difference in testosterone production from 5 to 8 hours of sleep, as you go from 5 to 8, your testosterone production is doubling, if not more than doubling. Everybody's got different levels of optimal sleep. The one you're talking about is the one that allows you to bounce up out of bed, charged super, supercharged for a super day. No heaviness in your body. No hesitancy to get out of bed. I mean, you're just up and you're going. And you remember the years when it was like that. So the erections aren't what they used to be. Before you reach for the herbal bottle, before you reach for the Viagra, sleep. Oh, yeah, but I can't quite do that. Because, you know, everybody's got commitments, and that's okay. But don't think you're going to move the testosterone ball without the sleep. Not to mention probably 200 other important concerns. So this thing about testosterone production and sleep, put that way up there at the top of the list. Take the 5 and get it to 8. Take the 6. Take the 7 and ask yourself, am I getting enough? There's nothing wrong with going to bed at 9 o'clock and getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Lots of people need that, and they get half of that. So sleep has its own evolution. I've done separate shows on sleep. Sleep is its own art form, and there's grades of sleep. There's how do you feel when you sleep across the night? In other words, how deep is your sleep? You can say you're sleeping straight, but are you sleeping deep? Everyone remembers that one sleep they had for one strange time. It was the best sleep of their life. They couldn't believe how good that sleep was. If only they could get sleep like that every single night. Well, guess what? That's a possibility. Great sleep is what you're looking for. Great sleep and testosterone production. That's huge. Another huge one is insulin. As insulin goes up, testosterone goes down. As insulin goes up, testosterone goes down. That is a classic law. A classic law. As insulin goes up, testosterone goes down for men. As insulin goes up, testosterone goes up for women. Women who are on that pre-diabetic and working in that pre-diabetic direction, those women have more testosterone. But it's the opposite for men. As that insulin goes up, testosterone goes down. What does that mean functionally? It means that even though you're being told you're not diabetic, even though your body can produce enough insulin to keep your blood sugar low, as long as your body is throwing each and every day tons of insulin into the blood, as long as it's doing that regularly because you're bringing your blood sugar so high, that insulin is going to crunch down upon the production of testosterone in the testy. So you've got insulin, you've got sleep, then there's exercise. The relationship between the production of growth hormone by the pituitary and exercise, I mean, the literature behind that is legion. The difference is up to about 20%. There's up to a 20% differential in the amount of growth hormone produced by people who exercise and people who don't. A good 45 minutes, 3 or 4 days a week, especially if you can bring your cardiovascular up, especially if you can burst train, especially if you can grow muscle. So, if we're talking about testosterone, we're talking about exercise too. Yeah, I know. It's all basic stuff. I get it. You see, but that's just it. What you have running around at health clinics everywhere, allopathic and holistic, are people who are forgetting these things. So when do we put the finger on it? And that's my point. The amount of money being spent on Hail Mary herbs to enhance testosterone production, and the amount of money and the amount of risk with drugs like Viagra, and the amount of counsel given, and all the emphasis goes on to the fix, the herbal fix, the pharmaceutical fix. Where's your sleep at? Where's your insulin at? Do you exercise? How do you exercise? And how do you exercise? Burst train. With medical clearance, of course, in case you have a particular health concern that could threaten or make this perilous for you. But if you're generally healthy, to go out 3 days a week and for half an hour to 40 minutes, get your heart rate up into that 130, 140, 150 range. for 30 minutes in on-off cycles. Burst training. And then 2 to 3 days a week, hitting the gym and pumping those muscles. Pumping iron in the general sense. Pumping iron and doing real cardio. You're talking about huge leaps in the production of testosterone and in the production of growth hormone. It's an interesting curve when you look at how exercise affects things like growth hormone and testosterone production. It's an interesting curve. If you do none of it, you suffer. If you do it a little bit, moderately, you improve it. If you do it moderately the right way, then you get these leaps of like 20% in 2 months, 25% increase in testosterone and growth hormone in 2 months if it's done correctly. And then if you do it excessively, you start destroying the curve again and you start dropping down towards zero. So when I say sleep, you have to understand it's its own art form. When I talk about regulating blood sugar and keeping insulin low, that's its own art form. When I talk about growing muscle and burst training, that's its own art form. When we talk about herbs in a moment, that's its own art form. Cleanses, it's its own art form. So when you talk about a health concern like libido, fertility, erectile dysfunction, what you're always talking about is the art of health. The art of health. So the art of exercise in this case is the art of knowing how not to kill yourself, hurt yourself, exhaust yourself, but engage vigorously. That balance between engaging vigorously but not hurting yourself. Enough said, but that's one huge limb of how to enhance testosterone production. And the closest I'll get you in today's show, listen to my other shows for more detail, is the kind of work where you're going to tone and grow the muscle by about 10 or 15%. So on your weight training day, if you're pumping away for 30, 40 minutes, two or three times a week, and over a period of months, you've put tone into that muscle and you've grown a little bit, a good 10, 15% in size. Well, then you're talking about intelligent training. And as far as cardio, if you're heaving and you're hawing, and in the in-between rest cycles, it feels good. And then you go back and you heave and you sweat and you get a little bit overwhelmed and then you stop and then it feels good. And then you go back to it. Usually you're at 130 to 150 beats per minute. And if you put those together over months, if you add the blood sugar regulation, you want to keep that blood sugar 1 hour after every meal. You want to see it under 100. If you're sleeping hours straight, 6, 7, 8 hours straight, if the psoas is competent so that the sacrum, you can feel the sacrum isolate from the rib cage. If you can feel the fifth lumbar vertebra separate from the sacrum, like a break dancer, like a belly dancer, like a martial artist, like there's life in the pelvis, well, then rest assured you're getting the parasympathetic flow down into the penis. If as you've lost weight and gotten flexible, you're starting to feel more sensation to the penis. If as you've lost weight and or gotten more flexible, you're starting to feel the erections get stronger and you're starting to feel that you can sustain the erection longer. If you're starting to get the understanding that the more blood you get there initially, the more the valves lock and the longer it stays hard. See, you're putting it all together now. If you start taking care of your health in a way that thins the blood, I mention blood viscosity all the time. We'll get into the herbs in a moment, but all the herbs that thin the blood, all the health principles that thin the blood, If your body's starting to feel less gluey, less sticky, lighter in its being all over your body, and you're extending that feeling down below, rest assured, per unit contraction of the heart, you're getting more blood down there. You're getting more blood down there just because the blood viscosity. So listen to all those principles. Those of you who listen regularly, isn't that beautiful how you can integrate so many principles and have good knowledge about so many principles? Sleep means to you, my regular listener, a lot more than it means to your average person. Cleansing means to you. Exercise means to you. Now, animal protein. Do you know the father of endocrinology? Do you know that our founders of glandular medicine discovered the power and the meaning of the gland by eating testicle? I looked for the guy's name today before the show. I couldn't find it. I had it written down somewhere, and I couldn't find it. One of the founding fathers of endocrinology started to understand the significance when he ended up eating, and lots of people on the farm ate the organs of the animals. Very common practice until recent to eat the organ of the animal. Still done in many other countries today, was eating the organ when the organs were clean. And one organ they would eat were the testicle. Well, this medical doctor ate the testicle of the animal and got his virility back. And that blew his mind. And that was the opening. It was the beginning of the study of glandular medicine. And people that do that today, you talk, the great thing about medicine is occasionally you talk to people living in nature. You know, you talk to gauchos from Argentina. You talk to some of the true cattle doctors, the guys that really work with animals. Over the years, they say things so common to them, so second nature to them. And it's absolute, it's complete news to us. And one of them is traditionally people that raised cattle, the cowboys, were no strangers to the power of eating the testicle. Now, before I even go to that extreme, you have to understand that the meat, if you talk to an Argentinian about meat, if you talk to somebody that takes the meat off their own land and eats that meat, if you talk to people eating elk or deer who get their own hunt from pristine areas, and they still exist, it's just not commonplace. America buys their food at the supermarket or Whole Foods. Outside of that, there's no such thing as good meat. But you see, there are people in the world and people in America who do it differently. And they get wild game. And when you eat wild game, elk, deer, antelope, some of the animal glandulars from clean, pristine places, the bolt of energy you get down into the hormonal system, into the testicles, is unbelievable. So look at the profile. Burst training, to growing muscle, to eating organ meat, to eating wild game, to keeping the insulin down, to keeping the sleep deep. Could you imagine sleeping in the earth? Sleeping in the earth. Can you imagine training your body with a level of flexibility? What? 60? What are we saying? That we've hit the point where it's unreasonable for Americans to exercise 60 to 90 minutes four times a week? Is that where we've gotten? Is that what we're saying? Are we saying between work and sleep and chores, we can no longer get 60 to 75 to 90 minutes a day of exercise? And if we're saying that, we better take a look at that. Take a look at that. But if not, add that to the list and look at the profile. If we understand concepts like the sacral pump, so that those nerves can pulse into the genitals. You're interested in stronger erections. You're interested in sustaining your erection. You're interested in holding your sperm. You look at these fundamentals. Your answers are right there. Now, if you do that, if you take care of that, and then you start going to the herbs, well, then absolutely fantastic. If you go to the bottom of the page, I've put a bunch of them. Picture 43, that's deer antler. That's Ron T. Garden's deer antler from Dragon Herbs. Amazing stuff for growth hormone. There's Dr. Bob Marshall's Premier Testosterone. That's Premier Testosterone with all sorts of stuff in there like maca. Then you've got goat weed. You've got Elithro. You've got ginseng. You've got picture 46. You've got T. Garden's cordyceps. Cordyceps, deer antler, maca, schizandra. Last but not least, this is one product I'm going to tell you about that if this doesn't help, it's the fundamentals if this one doesn't help. Super X. There's a guy down in Anaheim, Dr. Chi, Chi's Enterprise, Super X. One of the most powerful adaptogens for sex function I've ever experienced. But all of those herbs are good. Take them. Listen to the people that use them. And figure out how to put your herbal combination together. Add that to the fundamentals. Don't forget the fundamentals. Put them together, and you'll get to that next level. Okay, dads, happy Father's Day. I hope you can put some of this to good use. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.